Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettiner, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society, to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest today is Brian Minnick, who has written a book that's just come out called Montauk is Strange. On the cover is, the 10-story radar tower, now slowly deteriorating after half a century of non-use. And that's just one lead-in to why Montauk is strange. I've long thought Montauk was strange, but I'd like to hear why you think it, why it is.
That's a great question. I've always been reading your stories, actually, along the way. I actually have a dense paper story up on the wall behind me there. And that was part of the allure, since the book, as a kid, I went out there. We always went to the Montauk St. Patrick's Day parade. So our parents would tailgate at the lighthouse. And then, we'd go off on our bikes and we climbed into one of the old bunkers, Battery 216, by the lighthouse. And ever since then, I was hooked. And then I saw the book come out and I was like, there's no radar out there because I never saw it on the way out, or it's well hidden. So this whole thing was fascinating as a young person. It was like a place to explore. It was like a ghost town. But then over the years, I started getting into more and more of the history of all of Montauk, and just adds never-ending amounts of fascinating information. And with all the speculation to look into and go through cycles of believing certain things and not, it's just been a lifelong interest, and I've never stopped collecting information on it.
What are the standouts and highlights of the strangeness of Montauk?
Oh, there's a lot of good stuff. I mean, a lot of people don't realize some of the very first, that spread around the world, the technology, as far as, very beginnings of the internet in 1954 was for the SAGE radar and the semi-automatic ground environment itself. And those became ARPANET one day, and then eventually, decades later, turned into the modern internet. And then you had things like, the first cowboys, and just so many good firsts from Montauk. So this was like a very important place, it seemed. And that wasn't talked about a lot in the speculation and the stories. So this was like another aspect. And I kept finding new facets of Montauk. The strangest things, I found some really old UFO reports from out there. And one was sent right to Washington, to the White House in 1958. I have that one printed in the book. It was a formerly secret document. And then there were some big flaps. I found local news reports. I found some very strange things, between Abigail or some other ghost sightings and UFOs. You had all of that stuff, plus great history, Native American history, colonial history, and then all of the military that was in Montauk. The military history is fascinating because it's so deep.
Where would you like to talk about? Just talk about one at some length, like a minute or two. Don't jump around. Give me one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no problem. One in particular, how the radar used to turn in freesail mode. That was this major, and I know you wrote a story on that, how, and I still have people to this day asking me, looking at that story as a solid, that event actually happened with everybody coming into the base. And I always wanted to ask you about that. I know a lot of stories are spoofs.
Well, this is the truth. We lived on South Fairview Avenue, which, by the way, was a racetrack when it was built.
I don't know. That's if you... right. Carl Fisher. Yep.
So, and you could see the radar tower out there, because back in the day when I was a teenager out there, you could see the lighthouse from anywhere. Not the lighthouse so much, but the tower.
Wow. And
when it was operational, I was there when it was operational for the last 3 years of its run. When they started it, we had a stereo system in the house, big one. My dad did. He was the pharmacist in the drugstore. And when the radar would turn at a certain moment, it would go bzzzt on the stereo.
Yes.
And it also did that on the radio. And I asked him about it. He said, "Well, it's just what it does. Don't worry about it." So I didn't.
Yes.
It's
I
awful.
actually wrote a chapter on that.
It's about, we're 8 or 10 miles away. I mean, they may be at
Wow.
that 5 or 6 miles away. So that was true. I did write another story. I didn't want this to get to be about what I do. I did write this story about 10 years ago. For some reason, the lighthouse, not that for some reason that the radar tower turned, and that was made up. That was not true.
Okay,
But
because I used to take pictures of the radar in different positions, and then I presented them to the original authors at a meeting at a bookstore in Huntington. And then they went on to say the wind, of course, would turn it.
do you know about the attempt to fly to Europe in a bull and a dirigible? Do you know about that?
Yes. And the next flight was the actual successful one. And but a cat came over on that flight. They said the first cat to cross the Atlantic that they knew of in the air came on that one where they landed in Montauk, but it wasn't the first. I guess they made a stop in between, but a lot of records almost set here.
Caught in a storm in Newfoundland, and
Oh, okay, yes.
way in the night, they couldn't pin it down long enough, so that's how far it got. What about the Montauk Monster? Remember that?
Yes. That's been a major question that I get all the time. And there's Plum Island, of course, made it seem like there it's definitely something that escaped from there. But there's been a lot of people that have thought it was a raccoon and so forth. And of course, things don't look the same, but there is a house fly on its back, and that's the only indication of its size. So it's kind of smaller than it looks. It looks like, sizable creature, but it's actually kind of tiny. So I actually met somebody and they told me that was their dog, and they found it after everybody was fighting over it to for the story. He went and took it back with because he had a pet tracking chip in its ear. That's what somebody told me. So I get crazy stories from locals, and that's part of the book. I have a lot of locals' stories.
Tell me about yourself and how you've come to be interested. Were you born and raised in Montauk?
No, I'm from Southampton Town, closest to Riverhead, and I live technically in Southampton, but I went to Riverhead schools because it was, most of the people there did. And we would go out to Montauk all the time. In fact, I've been going there like my entire life with my parents, even when I was little, and some of their friends. So it was always a place that we would go to like almost once a month, I guess. So I feel like it's my second home.
Did they have a home out there?
No, we would just drive. It was about 40 miles, so day
Right.
trips. But I would love to have a house out there. I mean, it's like my home away from home, so that would be my dream.
When you finish school, what kind of work have you been doing? I see all these maps. What do you
Oh,
want to do?
yes. I actually worked, I sent ads into Dan's papers for every Friday, full page ad for 15 years. Oh, no, about 13 years. For Hildreth's department stores. I used to be the graphic designer and website designer, stuff like that. And that's how I met Tom and Oliver along the way.
What work are you doing now besides writing a book?
Oh, I have a bunch of, well, I recycle motherboards and stuff on the side. I have a website business where I build websites, and I have a bunch of side jobs that all together equal about a job and a half. So that in the book is keeping me busy.
Growing up, was your dad an avid fisherman?
No, my father was in the army, and he worked for he was he works on helicopter avionics in the army, and then he worked at Sperry, which is the company that built the Montauk radar. So he worked at Sperry Univac, fixing computers, and he always did get me interested in exploring all the places on Long Island, RCA, all kinds of places.
See out at Camp Hero. Camp Hero was named for a World War I general, I think, or world who died, who he'd been an artillery general or something. What is
Yeah,
that?
Andrew Hero. His name was Andrew Hero, and he was the chief of the coastal artillery for like the Eastern Seaboard or the North Atlantic. And I think they named it, nicknamed it Fort Hero before it became Camp Hero. But I've never been found a clear answer, and I've also chalked that up to people maybe just mixing up the name between camp and fort. But I heard that Fort Hero was when the seaplane base started in the 20s and w before the U.S. military reservation, when the whole town of Montauk had military everywhere, pretty much a Navy, Army, and Coast Guard. But I believe that it was officially Camp Hero, of course, but I never found anything more on Fort Hero. So it was named after Andrew Hero.
Definitely the military guy. They used to test torpedoes out by the Navy seaplane base.
Yes. I saw some old videos where they actually have them shooting the torpedoes into Fort Pond. And, of course, I got to see all the old buildings that were there, massive buildings.
Bay, not Port Pond.
Oh, Fort Pond Bay. Yes. Sorry about that. Fort Pond Bay. And I never knew if there were submarines that docked there.
That torpedo testing range, why it was there and when it was built and how what became of it?
I was there recently, and I actually am friends with some of the Coastal Artillery Group study group that was allowed to go into Camp Hero a few years ago. And they still can't figure out what these few bunkers I find near the Navy base on a hill next to it. They think that they might be old mining casemates for mines that you set off in the sound. So, but they don't have any maps that show those bunkers, and they have like every map. So that was pretty interesting. I just visited it again recently. And most people don't know those are there.
This was at Navy Beach.
It's between Navy Beach and Edward Ecker Park, and there's a big hill in between. And up on that hill, there's a small road and three little bunkers and a beautiful view over Fort Pond Bay.
There was out there. There was a giant airplane hangar there,
Oh, wow. Yeah, that must be long gone.
that's where the plane stayed. The seaplane would follow the bubbles of torpedoes that were built in factories in Queens during World War II. And they would come out on the train and be tested to see and make sure they worked correctly.
Wow.
And then were sent back either to be repaired or sent out for the war. That's what that was all.
Wow. That's amazing.
Tell me something I you think I don't know.
Let's see. That's a good one. About Montauk. That's a real challenge for me. There was a story once, and this has been everybody's been asking about this, and I've checked with dance papers, but according to people who remember this, locals apparently, there was a newspaper cover in the 1970s called, I mean, from dance papers that had a fake blueprint of the underground beneath the radar tower, the underground base, so to say. And this was supposed to be around 1970. And I was curious if you knew if that's a real thing or not.
No, I don't recall ever doing that. By the way, you know what those tunnels were used for?
Yeah, the World War II coastal artillery tunnels. They were a lot of them to store ammo, powder rooms, shell rooms, and then there's supposed to be a breathing tunnel where the phone lines would run to the battery commander station, which is near Radar Hill, which is the old house that they built the Air Force around. It's a bunker that's a it's a, called the battery commander station. But supposedly there's supposed to be a tunnel that ran under the tennis courts, all the way to that bunker, Battery 113. And other places like San Francisco, Hawaii, the same template cookie cutter bunkers have this tunnel. But at Montauk, it's always been there is no tunnel. So I wonder how the power generating room breathed because that was part of the way it worked. So it could be there and just people have lost track.
I've delivered prescriptions for my dad to the Air Force base.
Wow.
Be clear about it, it was an Army base initially during the beginning of
Yeah.
the war, and they disguised it to look like a fishing village by putting cupolas up on the roofs and stuff. And then they left,
Yes.
and the Air Force came and built the radar tower. That's when I was delivering things there, and it was a lively place they had. I remember going to a PX and you could buy toothpaste and things, candy
Wow.
and stuff. But that was in the 50s when they were there.
I would
What
have loved to.
the destroyer that came up on the beach was
Oh,
that's
in
what.
Amagansett, the sub that came up in Amagansett with the spies.
Well, no, that's in another town, but no, there
Oh,
was
yeah.
a, and I guess it was around 1968,
Wow.
a Navy destroyer being towed from Boston to Philadelphia broke its chains in a storm, and beached
Wow.
itself in Montauk, out on the rocks, out to, by where Camp Hero is. And it remained there.
Wow.
Actually, it was near where Andy Warhol was a little to the east of that. And it was stayed there. They couldn't get it off. At one point, while they were trying to tow it off, a cable broke and whiplash killed one of the sailors.
Wow.
It stayed there for about 6 months until they finally were able to cap it and put air in it and tow it out to sea and sink it. That was
I
that.
never saw this story in all my research. I never saw that.
This is a podcast. What is supposed to be telling me about
That's one thing.
you?
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. I mean, the things you've just being there in that time, that's like my dream, just to see the radar turning. Like I've never seen. I do have an old video that shows it turning from Sperry, but I'd love to see it in person. And it's just to be on the base back then when it was all new and not the way it is now.
Where do you live in?
I'm still in Southampton Town. I'm on the Peconic Bay, so I like the staying near the beach if I can.
It's believed that the blimps and dirigibles that were in Montauk during the First World War were in an Air Force base where the plaza is now. And I've
Yes.
never seen any. Have you ever heard, read anything about that? And if so,
Yes, I actually I reprinted some of those photos in the book, and I did. You know, I used the I sourced all the. I mean, I cited all my sources and in the bibliography, of course. But I did have some pictures that I found of the hangars, right where the Carl Fisher Tower is over there, and around the pond. And I continue to find new stuff all the time, even after I made the book. But there was several pictures, and there's a book called Pictorial History of Montauk. That book has some nice photos of the blimps and the hangars, and I think that you can get that still around. I think I've seen it in Montauk, but yeah, they're rare photos.
Is there a runway, do you know? Was there a place where you could land in the land?
Well, there's the old Montauk Airport. I didn't know if that was a previous military structure. I don't think so.
Well, it is really a pleasure to run into somebody who sees how odd Montauk has been. And one of the things that was new, brand new, when I got there were all the motels. They had
Oh,
started
wow.
building them in 1954. We moved in 1956. By 1958 or 9, there were like 30 motels in Montauk.
Wow.
And
Yeah.
all for a low, people with a 2 week vacation, take your family out. We wanted the husband goes fishing, where others are at the beach. This was a sudden thing that happened over a 5 year.
Wow.
It was all shiny and new. It was
Wow.
out there.
The Memory Motel, the most famous because of the song. But there was something I've been looking for, and it's supposedly an Andy Warhol painting in an old building, almost like he did it as like graffiti, like without permission. And it's a building near the lighthouse parking lot. I don't know if you're familiar with any kind of rogue paintings he did around town, but I've seen pictures of the inside once, and there was indeed some paintings that looked like his. And I know this area has been closed for a long time, so I just didn't know if you ever heard that rumor. It was another thing that I was following to find out.
Talk about Teddy Roosevelt and what you know about him.
Okay, sure. Teddy Roosevelt, the Rough Riders, the first VFW was basically essentially started in Montauk because of Teddy Roosevelt's best friend, who died of starvation because the supplies were having trouble getting out to Montauk. So a lot of the sick soldiers were passing away. And when one of his good friends, one of the Rough Riders, died, they made something that became the VFW. And also, that was Camp Wickoff was the Red Cross's first mission ever. So here's a bunch more, firsts that have now spread across the planet. Not going along with the usual story, but it all is one big thing to me, one big story, Montauk and the base. But Teddy Roosevelt, there's a Rough Riders Road in the base, and I read that he used to ride with the Rough Riders down to the ocean every morning to bathe. So I'm not sure if they named the road inside of Camp Hero because that was one of the places they rode their horses or something, or what's the maybe they just grabbed the random name that was associated. But we did find an old cannon pedestal on that very road from the Revolutionary War. It's made from crude.
What road?
It's called Rough Riders Road, named after Teddy Roosevelt, and it's connecting right before the main gate on which is now Camp Hero State Park. There's a road to the left, and it goes down to Old Montauk Highway. And on that road, somewhere in between, there's a cannon pedestal.
And that road goes west or east?
It goes north and south, I believe, north
Let's see.
south, and it connects to Old Montauk Highway, where the Bluffs parking lot inside of Camp Hero. There's a big parking lot on the Bluffs where they used to have the anti-aircraft guns, and Montauk Highway would continue through there. So it would be the first right if you're going on Old Montauk Highway. So,
Tell me why the United States Army was there. It was 30,000 troops there in tents. Why did they come there?
oh, so they were the first soldiers returning from a foreign war and the Spanish-American War, and down in Cuba, and a lot of the soldiers were sick with malaria, yellow fever, and other tropical diseases. So they came to Montauk to quarantine. It was an ideal place to where they could spread out, and they had detention camp only near the Montauk Manor. That was the where the sickest troops would go. But everybody else was kind of just recovering, and a lot of people were hungry, but it was a rush to get it. They threw Camp Wickoff together so fast, and I think it was 2 months long, 2 or 3 months, and it made headlines across the United States on every newspaper for those 2 months. Camp Wickoff was the main story, so it was a big thing. And at you know the it's amazing how many troops were in Montauk, 30,000. That's just incredible. To the whole town was covered in tents and hospitals. The old map is pretty astounding. You see how huge the area is.
Tell us what's on these maps behind you. What are they of?
Oh, sure. I just have some. This one is a picture of the old Wine-Dannie Inn with all of the with all of the anti-aircraft 90mm and 37mm guns in towed on trailers and sandbags. And that's the old two buildings that were the old Wine-Dannie Inn, I suppose. And then we have this map here is an old map from the park that's really old. It's been deteriorating. The Montauk Manor sticker. I have the lighthouse before it had its day mark, before when it was all white and shorter. And then a postcard from the Montauk Manor. I have this is from Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind with Jim Carrey. They say, "Meet me in Montauk." And this was from Dance Papers. Here's the top of the article. I have the blueprints for the plotting room for plotting room 113, official Army blueprints, which I printed all in the book. I have Suffolk County GIS. Overhead aerial shots of the Montauk Air Force Station over the years.
Camp Hero, these maps.
Yeah, I have Camp Hero blueprints from the US Army from World War II, the War Department. They're formerly secret.
What's the one to your left there?
Oh, to my left here, we have this is the secret key for what each position in World War II, all of the bunkers and what they did. So this map key, I had to look up the symbols and find out what they all meant. But for example, on Rough Riders Road, there was a meteorological station there and a signal station, I guess, where they put up flags, and they had a searchlight tower there. So there's so many things I didn't never knew were at Montauk. They had searchlights in four places. They had guns on top of the bunkers sometimes. And some of these, so I had to learn how everything worked, basically, in the coast and the trigonometry that they would use to see where the ships are. They have to get it from two base end stations. And then
Right.
they could use basically call the shot into the plotting room and tell the battery commander to fire and then see how they did and do it all over again. So it was fascinating, the amount of phone cables that were everywhere.
Also, there was a fort in off Montauk, which was built in the 19th century, I think, which
Oh, wow.
was used for bombardment by the Air Force in the 20s, and they destroyed the whole thing.
Yes, Cartwright Island, and also there's a second one too, but Cartwright Island, and they call it the ruins. I think it
Yes.
was called not Fort Mitchie. It was it had a name, but they only named it. They never used it, so they just bombed it. That's a I'd love to. I think I sailed around that once.
How many different of these legends are, and how many chapters are you write, did you write in your book about?
Oh, that's good. I have five regular chapters, and then I have an entire section of our field reports, the first 30 field reports. up until the time it became a park. And then I have a whole section of local, 30 local eyewitness anonymous testimonies. I have an entire military history, which is like a giant chapter from starting by era, chronological order. And then I have also a bunch of documents, maps, three different image galleries, and a whole bunch of other odds and ends in there. So it's the kitchen sink, and I have literally suitcases of and boxes of stuff for Montauk research over the years. So my job was to try to jam as much as I could in and share it.
Thank you for being on the podcast. I enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Take care.